not what people want. I wish I had actually been recording that. That was good stuff.
I think it'd be fun as to go on. I thought about it when I saw it on Groupon. It was like a $200 for like a 6-person pole dancing class. I thought that would be funny. We did that. get all the guys, but we have to get Miranda.
I'd be so pissed because Aaron would be the best at it.
Yeah.
Aaron would be such a good pole dancer.
And Miranda would be pissed we didn't pay for her.
Right. Well, we'd have to pay for Miranda. Miranda's going through hard times. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying we wouldn't pay her to have us do the class. She's like, you got it on Groupon? You have to give me money?
All right, well.
These are certified instructors, okay? Do you have a certification?
I was on a date with a girl, and we were driving down Emerson, and I said, hey, there's a pole dancing place over there that I discovered. She goes, yeah, I know. I've been there. I was like, well, I wish this was the third date.
Oh.
I'm finally feeling good.
That's good.
I was so grumpy last week.
Glad you're back in the gym.
I went last night. I destroyed legs.
Good, good.
It's, you wonder why, like, oh, why do I feel like shit? It's because I'm only working out once a week. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I feel like garbage.
I've been trying to get back just like, because I haven't had time to go back to the yoga studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been trying to keep on yoga on my own.
Right.
But like I said, I've been doing most of my moves just like, by myself, like once a week,
right?
And I'm too cheap for a gym membership. So,
he once told me that the park was better than the gym. I was
sure
just like,
it is.
Come on,
until
Harry,
it gets cold.
Stop
until it gets
it.
Cold. Until it gets cold. I did like a. You know, are we? We're not.
I don't know for live yet. It's doing something.
I did.
There was a problem. Of course, there was. Why would it work? Why would it be easy? Why would it work?
I did, to tell you the truth, I did social engineer myself into a gym, though. I got a gym badge.
How?
Social engineering.
How?
A lot of white people have
there you
white,
go again, Harry.
Have white guilt, and when you, or a black person, and you get uppity, and you threaten them, and they get scared, and make them hurry up, and when you start going like, I'm calling Channel 6 of this racist ass, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, say, I don't belong to this gym, and they just give you a badge really quick.
That's called racism.
It's called social engineering.
It's not social engineering. It's called white. It's called black privilege.
Yeah, yeah.
You and your black privilege.
I was talking about white and black privilege and privileged with my sister today.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and I kept saying like I hate the term white privilege. I prefer preference, or you know, some people give white people preferential treatment. I just don't. I hate the concept of privilege or like a privilege someone's born with, especially in America.
Right.
Like, I remember talking to a feminist one time in college, and they were talking about like, well, like male, and you have male privilege, and I was like, and you should check that. I was like, I would only check my male privilege if you would concede to the fact that for my fact of just being born male makes me better than you.
And how did that work?
Oh, it was a huge argument. It was awesome. I just laughed. It was awesome for me. What, the idea of, like, just because I was born with balls and a dick, I had instant privilege. What, if it means I'm better than you? Awesome, then you're not faster, stronger, smarter than I am. I am, because I have to check in and bring myself down to your level.
Oh, I see what that does.
You click... Did you go live with me saying that story? Thanks. Appreciate it.
No, it wasn't live. It'll be on tape, but...
What? Okay. Racist raw files.
Harry's racism revealed. Up next. Group chat screenshots coming up live.
Okay, I was trying to... I was talking to this whole Turkish story with my sister, and she was screeching in my ear on the phone. I'm like, you want to come on the podcast? I would if I wasn't busy.
Oh, your sister's welcome here anytime.
This is my older sister.
Ooh.
This is the different one. This one's married to again, yeah.
Of course.
This one's married. She is a she's not, you know what? Strange thing. You are you would like her, but she wouldn't like you. You're too
uppity.
I think you talk too much.
Yeah.
She likes quiet, reserved guys that she can punk on.
Yeah, see, I don't mind quiet. Mm-hmm. I don't mind chatty, but you just have to let me be me.
You can be you, but you need to be quiet in the corner.
Yeah, no, that's not not how it works. That's why the first marriage didn't work. She just wanted the little wallflower to follow her around and dote on her, and I'm not a doter.
You will dote on her and walk her.
Right? No, no, that's not how that's going to work. All right, we are live.
Now we're live.
Yeah, was wrong with. I was trying to stream it in a higher quality, and of course, can't do that. Why would that work? Silly me.
So I was experimenting with like an OBS after I left on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do any? You didn't do it.
I did. I got it all set up. I got it all finally set up. So I have it all prepared, but I haven't gotten around to playing with it more.
It's okay. I'm sorry. I feel bad about ditching you, and because I wanted to play with things, and
yeah,
and then I kind of played with some of the stuff on my end and stuff like that. Don't forget, you can load videos up on that Twitch channel, so you can load this thing up on Twitch. And,
okay.
Yeah.
I will. I'll probably start doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves, while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and become a subscriber on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. Without your financial support, independent media like this cannot exist, and in exchange for supporting our program, we give you great bonus content. And if you're $25 and above, you even get a cool poster, which I mailed out to about 15 people the other day. So
thanks, Christy.
Yeah, so those should be coming out. Thanks to Christy Avery for helping put those together. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or in our Facebook group or Discord channel. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. In this show, we're going to talk about daylight savings time, the shooting in Texas. We're going to talk about the bizarre happenings with Rand Paul. But first, I want to introduce my co-host for the Tuesday show. As always, it's Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
Going good, going good. Got a small little headache, but each shot of whiskey makes it better.
You smell like a booze factory over there.
Well, Gunther's going through teething, so the only thing that helps me out and her out is whiskey.
Yeah, you're 45 minutes late because you had a flat tire.
Flat tire, yep.
You had a baby screaming in your ear all day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you, what else?
My sister was supposed to also take Gunther so it could help me do show prep, but she bailed on me because she had to, she had to move one of her sorority members.
Okay.
You know, so we know which family's, more superior to her.
Uh-huh.
Blood over Greeks. Yep. Stinky Greeks. But
never trust a Greek.
Yep.
No show in Agnos.
But other than that,
that was about Chloe, by the way. Don't start bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Forgot we got to go Chloe.
Then you brought in a chair today.
Oh, yes. I finally have gotten my chair in. I finally brought the chair in. It's my really nice chair that I got from an unknown location several years ago. Shout out to Min. It's comfy. It's
a restaurant chair. It's a church pew chair.
It's not a church pew chair.
It's got a damn communion cup on the side.
That's there to hold the shots.
All right, okay.
That's holding the shots.
You've been on, and I'll post a picture of Harry's chair up on the Instagram. Everybody will be very confused who isn't listening to this episode, but I'll post that up there so you can see Harry's chair. I did this on the Instagram stories. The half of my table, Hold on, Jeff Vibbert's going to FaceTime in. We need to talk to little Jeff Vibbert.
What?
So FaceTime in. Let's see if this works. That's who FaceTimed in just a moment ago. I have half my table for lights and cameras, so I have two chairs that I can't find. Now I've got three chairs that I have to rehome and relocate.
Well, the fireplace is going.
The fireplace is going. We're both very tired today. I had a four-hour nap. All right, let's see if this works. Jeff, can you hear me? Hello, Jeffrey? Yep, nope, this isn't going to work. It's unfortunate.
Talking about things you missed.
Yep, we missed Jeff. We missed Jeff, little Jeff Vibbert. All right. So yes, Harry and I are both very tired.
Yeah,
you're tired.
Me more than
baby.
You,
of course. How is it with a baby?
It's a joy to have. Teething is not a joy. It's the random schedules. But it's great having a kid. It's more of the randomness that just pops up, like the things you read about, or like it's not as bad. Like it's not colic. If you're dealing with a colicky baby, I trust me, my day's better than yours.
Of course.
And I feel bad for you, but because I do get those moments of, you know, like just utter just quiet and then unconsolable anger.
Why?
Because, you know, she's teething or she's upset or she wants my attention and I try not, and I'm not giving it to her, or
right.
She'll wake up, or the worst possible thing, which, you know, is I didn't put the e-old ad blocker on the tablet. Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. Your burp, Joe had her listen to Joe Rogan. She was falling asleep, and then it kicked to an ad, and she woke up, and she was very angry at that ad.
She's very opinionated.
Very,
for,
yeah.
For how old?
6 months now. Yeah, so she's woke. Pure woke.
She's
six
very month, woke.
Very woke at 6 months, you know. So she was very upset, and I tried to put on like those nursery rhymes. She wasn't having it, you know, because the mads just kind of made her upset. But other than that,
Because
she gets up at, she'll go to sleep, right, at 10 o'clock, and then she'll be asleep, and then about 1 o'clock, you know, randomly, she'll wake up once in a while. Not every time, but it seems like every time I want to go to bed before 1 o'clock, she'll wake up. But if I stay up to like 2 a.m., yeah, she'll sleep through it.
So we have something called Patreon, which you can subscribe to help. Hold on, we're getting a phone call. Hello? Uh-oh. Who's this?
What's up?
Oh, hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Spangle?
Not bad. What do you want?
I don't know. Ratings are so bad for Wall that you have to answer my phone calls during the broadcast.
You're such a little prick.
I'd just like to say you used to answer my calls when you were on air.
Jeff Vibbert of Barstool Heartland, number one podcast in the land, correct?
Yep, no big deal. Like my third number one podcast. They call me Scott Storch a podcast. So I just crank out a hit.
If you've never looked at Scott Storch's Instagram, it's hilarious. He's just like this old weird dude now who just plays on his piano. It's so I could watch it for hours watching Scott Storch.
I went to a weird rabbit hole the other day of just watching Scott Storch videos.
Yeah.
And he looks like an amphibious creature that like escaped from a lab. He's a weird-looking guy.
Now, Jeff, you are, of Heartland Radio, great podcast, and I'm glad that you have how many Twitter followers now?
It's over 25,000, Spangle. Look, still not verified. I didn't call in to talk about me, though. I called in to talk about you. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Everything's great. Harry is grumpy, though. He's drinking heavily.
What's he drinking?
Jim Beam Honey.
Yeah, Jim Beam Honey.
Yeah.
Just taking shots.
Just
good to talk to you, Harry.
Do you guys have any black co-hosts over there?
We don't. We could use one.
Yeah.
We could use a black female co-host.
A black female co-host. I'm sure, go ahead.
Hit a couple demographics there. That'd be amazing.
All right. Well, we have to go.
I can Caitlyn Jenner
Are you sure?
If need to.
I'm enjoying this conversation.
Jeff loves to call in the middle of our podcast. Once on our live show episode, the last live show, just called in. I think you've called in on every live show.
Back when Wall was Wall.
Shut up. See, Jeff loves.
I love the new format. I still love the show. I watch all the highlights on YouTube. Check it out. It's great. Wall is doing big things. I love it.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, Jeff loves, he's in Dear Leader's Court, which is for our $10 a month and up subscribers, but I put him in there just for fun. And he loves to comment on every single episode. The show was so much better when Kat and Greg were on it. And then he goes to a different video and he'll say, this show is so much better now that, like, he just shit posts.
I had no idea that I was behind a paywall. That's amazing.
Yeah, you got VIP access. VIP access, bro.
I'm in the VIP club. I didn't know you had a VIP section. Good for you guys. I'm proud of what you guys are doing.
All right, goodbye. All right. Yeah, I have lost. Stone mentions Jeff's rant the not the last time, but the time before when Jeff was on the show. At the end, there was a little Easter egg where Jeff went off, and I wish I could find that audio, man. When he went off about basically where he worked at the time, my current employer, which is why we buried it. It was just insane. He was so funny.
It'll come back once you know, he runs for office or something else happens.
Yeah. Vibs is a good kid, good friend, mm-hmm. and I'm so happy to see him have so much success. And thank you for deigning to lower yourself to come on We Are Libertarians.
We'll wake up at 3 a.m. and call him in the middle of things you missed. We'll show him.
Now, we're breaking format. We've been chit-chatting for a little longer than we normally do, so we got to get into it. But one of the reasons I'm just, like, pooped. I'm so tired, and it's because of daylight savings time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it's one of those, like, weird things that doesn't really matter that people get super pissed off about. Like, it's not a distraction, but it's just one of those things that people irrationally get mad about. I don't know if you've noticed this, but you're one of those people who just gets mad about this. This is why we're talking about it first. Harry's like, we were talking about daylight saving time on this program tonight.
Dang straight. We're talking about this because it's stupid. It's stupid that we have to, it is current year, okay? And we're sitting there turning clocks back to save time for what odd reason, for what point? Who cares if it gets dark at 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. or 6 p.m. or 5 p.m.? It's just going to go dark. It's just, you know, I don't understand why humanity, whose souls are too weighed down much by gravity, once we travel through the through the outer space,
uh-huh.
we're going to have to get used to some universal time. Why not start now? You know, why do we have to all have to be on, like, why do we even have time zones? Well, we want to make sure 8 o'clock is 8 o'clock. Why? Why does it even matter? Because my 8 o'clock is still not California's 8 o'clock.
Okay, you science denier.
Not denying science. I'm denying the aspect of, like, well, people want it to be sunny at noon, at high noon. Why?
Stone says, it's the freaking sun. Let it do what it wants.
No, we can control the sun.
Right. So there's a great podcast, a great history podcast. I'll mention two great history podcasts. The first being Hardcore History with Dan Carlin. I'll mention that later. But Backstory, which is a program of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. So it's three professors from this university who do a podcast, and one is, you know, they're historians in different times of American history. And so it's always really interesting, and they did one called On the Clock. You basically have to Google it at this point. I don't think it's in their RSS feed anymore, but it is. I also learned that Warsaw, Indiana was the first electrified town, the first electrically lit town. So they basically talk in this about how railroad tycoons invented the time zones. And so let's give you a little history of time, because I think it's pretty interesting, or not. So you have, in the olden days, in the 1800s, before the late 1800s, everybody went by the sun. So you could go from one town to a different town, and everybody's noon would be different. You could literally be the next town over. So, for instance, Greenwood is a mile from here, and mm-hmm. I'm in Southport.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're just south of Indianapolis. Each one of those three, who are geographically all very close, could have a different time, and it was all set based on the town clock
mm-hmm.
and the time that everybody just agreed that they'd work upon. And
seems reasonable.
Right. And so you had railroads. Once railroads came about, everybody was working on different times. The Buffalo station, for instance, had five different clocks, four railroad clocks, and then the Buffalo time. So there are five different clocks with five different times in the Buffalo zone, because it depended on what railroad you were. You know, when we were going on horseback, it didn't really matter. Like, people in 1850 didn't have the same kind of concerns about time and you know, schedules that we have now. We have much busier lives.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about it, 100 years, 200 years ago, and if in 1850, if I were in the same exact spot in history, I would spend my day building my house, fixing my house, growing my food, and surviving, basically.
Yeah.
There is no capitalism. Like, I went today to go write fart jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came home and took a nap, and I had Chick-fil-A, and now I'm here on the internet talking. Like, I didn't have to forage for food or anything. So I guess it was Wabash, not Warsaw. Am I right? I thought it was right. Wabash, Indiana.
Sure.
First electrically lit town in America. The Facebook chat was trying to correct me. So everybody had a different time based on where the sun was and what they believed it was. And so it really got started with the creation of the National Weather Service. Once the group of weather scientists start to put together the maps and try to figure out fronts, well, it's very hard to study weather and climate and map it out and study fronts if you don't have some sort of standardized time. So if you're not accurate in how fast that storm is moving,
mm-hmm,
based on time, then it's very hard to do that kind of science. And so scientists started pushing for standardized time at the same time that the railroads were pushing for standardized time. So a group of railroad owners in 1883 got together and said, we're going to create time zones. And they decided to do it before Congress did it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they drew the time zones, the five time zones in America, in places that were advantageous to them.
Okay.
And so that's where the actual lines, the vertical lines were drawn.
Explains the Chicago-Indianapolis split.
Exactly. So it's why we're on Eastern, because we were still more of an Eastern city at that point in Indianapolis. There's a debate in Indiana whether we should be Eastern or Central. It's not a debate. Those people are stupid, because it would be dark at 4:30 here.
Good.
If we were on Central.
Who cares?
I will let you rant once I'm done setting up the topic. He's got a lot of feelings today, a lot of feelings on this specifically. they draw these standardized time zones, standardized clock, and there was a day in the early 1800s called the early 1880s called the Day of Two Noons, and the rail cars literally would stop where they were at, wait until the exact precise time, and then leave so they would arrive at the station at the correct time. And people walked out, and one of the jokes at the time was, if you slip on a banana peel, it could take you 15 minutes to fall down at the right time. So people were standing there watching the clock, and then when it hit noon, they were like, oh, okay, well. It was basically like memes back in the day. So they were all interested in watching this one thing. So that's
slow moving memes.
So it was the railroads that standardized time and set the term standard time and created the time zones here in America in the late 1800s. Fast forward to World War I. There's a great article on the Libertarian Institute called Daylight Saving Began as Wartime, by Stuart Jones. This was March 15th, 2017. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. I'd say daylight savings time, and it's daylight saving time, and people get pissed. Suck it. the implementation of daylight savings time, when we adjusted the clock an hour forward and backward, was implemented in 1918, and it was called fast time at that time. And Woodrow Wilson put it together in support of World War I. 7 months later, it was repealed by the majority of the states. And Franklin D. Roosevelt instituted year-round wartime in 1942. Daylight saving time was instituted enforced to promote war and to give more time for people to produce.
Mm-hmm.
There was also in 1974 and 75, Richard Nixon signed into law the Emergency Daylight Saving Time Energy Conservation Act and enforced extended periods of daylight savings time to control energy and embargoes of oil. A total of 70 countries take part in changing clocks twice a year, recognizing some form of DST. This author says it's total madness. It's not total madness. All right, calm down. It's a little hyperbolic.
No, it's total madness.
It's total madness.
It's current year.
while federal government has made the argument that energy savings stems from time change, independent studies have measured a loss in productivity. People are less productive when they lose an hour of sleep and are therefore more prone to accidents while their bodies are adjusting. Independent studies have found that sleep efficiency was reduced by 10%, car accidents increased by 17%, Heart attacks increased by 25%, and the change in time resulted in $434 million in lost production and medical expenses within the first week of that time change. So there are, you know, there are parallels between the government's control and manipulation of time and currency. Regardless of the government's manipulation, changing the time of day does not mean there's more time in a day.
Yep.
So, and this is having worked in the radio industry. So in Indiana, we didn't change time until we were the last state. Hoosiers are very stubborn. And we refused to change with the rest of the country, except for like a couple counties in Arizona, refused to change time zones. And then when Mitch Daniels got in office, he's like, we need to stop pretending this is 1834. Let's change the time zones, because it's like we didn't get a lot of new industry and business in Indiana because we didn't change the time. And there was a lot of lost opportunity economically because people could never figure out what time it was here. They were like, it was constant. It was so annoying. It was just like, when, and working in the radio industry where everything's set up on satellites and clocks, it was absolute hell for 2 weeks out of the year where you're trying to get yourself synced up on these. You had to resync all the satellites. So it just was, it was a pain in the butt. And on the flip side, this week where you lose an hour and you're waking up at, you know, you for work, you wake up at 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning, and then you've got to go back to 3 and 4 in the morning. It's really rough. I mean, so, and I imagine everybody out there is feeling very tired, Harry, because they've lost an hour of sleep. I'm feeling grumpy. I'm always grumpy this week.
Let's fall back. They gained an hour, actually.
Whichever. Whatever it is. It's
can't even get your conspiracy crap, you know.
Okay, a conspiracy. Listen, here's my stance. Yes, it is stupid. Yes, it makes no sense. Yes, it is dumb.
Denies science.
But what do I really care? There's people dying in the world. Just change the clock.
Who knows? That could be the thing that saves a lot of people, okay? I think of the lives saved.
All right, so why are you so against daylight savings time?
For one, everybody, are you trying to tell you the mighty iPhone X can't deal with time? Like, everyone walks around with basically a pocket of sensors in their pocket.
Sure.
You know, it's a thin client connected to a bunch of servers. They all deal with time. These servers, everything, the internet, doesn't really run on the same time that we all run on. It's run on UTC. It runs on a universal time clock. That's what it really runs on.
Right. Which wouldn't have...
And then translate the time to where you are currently to give like a representation of a time that you can read. So you can look at your clock and go, hey, it's 9 a.m., but it's going to read it to basically off the UTC. But all these times, these numbers are just arbitrary because there's only a set number of hours of sunlight per day and so many hours of darkness.
Okay.
Does it really matter if 12 o'clock is pitch freaking black if, you know, if there's still... Eight hours of daylight. Does it matter?
What? But can you not concede, Harry, that we wouldn't have gotten to this point had there not been a time standardization? A, don't you drink your Perrier water with your pinky up like that in my face? I take that as a hostile act. He literally lifted up his can of Perrier water with his pinky in the air and just had this little satisfied smirk on his face as if to say, you uncultured swine.
Yeah, but people also pooped in outhouses and didn't have electricity or iPhone X's.
Right.
I'm going to call it the iPhone X.
But without standardization, would you have gotten there?
You know what?
Would UTC exist?
You know what? The first car has nothing to do with the piece of crap car that you drive today. You wouldn't be able to drive one of the first cars because it has all these stupid handles. But we don't do throwbacks and try to keep all these handles around. No, Cadillac said, hey, you know what's better? Let's evolve and get a wheel and just a couple of pedals. Okay? Move on. It's a thing of the past. You know, it's like the stupid calendar. Why is it 2017? It should be 2017 of the Ezekiel calendar. Okay? Human existence has been on the earth for 12,000 years. Okay? You know, the idea that we go to 2017 from stupid people back 2,000 years ago is dumb.
You mean Jesus. Stupid people like the Lord and Savior of all of the universe, Jesus.
I'm just saying it's dumb to
count. Don't you drink your pinky water in my face after insulting the Lord.
I'm just saying it's dumb to just, you know, like calendar time that way. If human beings have been on this earth for that long, we should count the years by that. It's simpler than trying to do stupid conversion. Was that AD or BC? And then you've got to count up for BC. So it's if you're counting, so it's 250 BC, then it becomes 259 BC. This is dumb. That's stupid. Okay? It's dumb.
Trying to go back and date when human beings began is like trying to say when life begins. Like, you can say it begins at conception. Somebody else can say it's when the baby breathes its first breath of air. Like, there isn't a consensus on that. So, you know, the Gregorian calendar is doing fine.
It's a dumb calendar, and it's missing years, okay? A lot of the theories, you also find out that a lot of the Gregorian monks are wrong. Like, they felt like they've messed up.
Honestly, 1312, we can get rid of that year. It didn't really do much for us. It was a waste of a year anyways.
So can we agree that Gregorian calendar is wrong? Can I will also agree that the current time clock's got us to this point. But you know what? It's current year. We walk around with a pocket of sensors in our pocket. We can evolve and move on.
Sure, but practically, and I'm busting your balls because you're not wrong. Like
you have to be there and do that.
The legislative process and the arguments and trying to get people to change and like, it's just not even, why is it even worth the effort? Like to get Indiana to do something that benefited Indiana economically was
like marijuana.
Going to DST was a 30-year argument that barely got passed and brought great economic benefit to Indiana when it finally passed.
Mitch Daniels' darkest hour, actually.
Okay. But, like, the argument was, on the other side, was just silly.
The time clock that brought all the business here, or the simple fact that Illinois sucked, Michigan sucked, Ohio sucked?
It was because Indiana has a better tax code than those places. You're right.
Yeah.
But it also when it's as simple as I don't know what time it is there, then people don't want to do business there.
Yeah, but back then I was like, what, like crappy Nokia phones? You know, your current phone, you can drop it anywhere you want in the world, and it will go like sync up to the GSM tower and tell you what time it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so. Current year, that's a moot point now.
Right.
It's dumb. You know, you can come up with an old, you know, time just for your freaking town.
This is one of the issues for libertarians, though. If we can't get people to agree on something as simple and as common sense as, you don't need DST. We're not farmers. We're not, we're at war, but not in the way that it's not like a total war society like it was in World War II.
Yeah.
What's
the point of switching?
What's the point of doing this? How do you roll that back?
Yeah. And then, but the other thing is, right, is that you also, like, here's the other thing where I don't think I'm the smartest man in the world, but it really irks me when I get with people and their largest complaint about daylight saving time is because they don't know how to switch their clocks in their car. Frustrates me when I get in someone's car, like, they didn't switch their time back right at an hour.
Right.
And I just sit there and I go, you know what? And I just sit there and I do it for them.
Well, that's like not putting a battery in your smoke alarm, and so it constantly goes boop.
Every
15 minutes, like that just is a sign that you're just kind of a dumb person or
I left that into a when I was doing a podcast one time just to annoy a co-host. Mm-hmm. He kept doing it, and he actually changed it on air because he got tired of it, because he refused to do it because he
because
he hated it.
Can
you could hear it in the East Parker's, like the beeps inside of it. It's hilarious, like bit on it, but I just didn't feel like it.
The type of people who don't change their battery in their smoke alarm or change their clocks in their car because they don't know how, like, those are the people that were going to get eaten by tigers
right.
5,000 years ago. Like, we've enabled these people to live, and we shouldn't do it anymore.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, the world is too safe. We need to get rid of those type of people that can't do that. Or, like, this one idiot that I saw on the highway driving with their, like, phone, like, right up on their face, driving up. When I see those people, I like to get really close to their car and then honk the horn so they think they went into my lane.
Mm-hmm.
So it freaks them out. They drop their phone and they get back on around. I'm like, good.
I was FaceTiming somebody yesterday, and they were FaceTiming me while they were driving, and I'm just like, this is dangerous. Are you sure you should be doing this? She's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, okay.
Oh dear God. Yeah, yeah, it's awful. Now, see, it wouldn't be so bad if they, like, some people were doing that in like tiny little smart cars, but a lot of them do that in these massive SUVs.
Right. You know? Well, that's the place to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, final thoughts on DST. Keep this is your time to rant. I'm not going to interrupt you. I'm going to sit back here. I'm going to turn my
Okay, so my thing with daylight saving time or time in general, first off, like I said, we all walk around with computers. Most people hit like probably like three different computers a day, their laptop, their tablet, their phone in their freaking pocket. Come on, this thing calculates time for you. Most of you people don't even wear a watch anymore. Like, I have watches, but I don't wear them because you know why? Because I carry this thing around. It has a time on it, and it's always synced up, and I don't have to wind it. You know, it's... I get it. Like, it's more of a... I think the main reason, if it... The main reason people do DST is because it's a stupid government program that has left on, and it's too hard to get on the books. That's the biggest problem with everything dealing with has to do with the government. It's so to them, it's so easy to put something on the books. It's so hard to take something off. It should be the other way around. I still to this day believe if any law gets written in a book, each thing should have a sunset. Like eventually, this thing just expires, and if people want it back, they'll put it back on the books. Other than, you know, but. Yeah,
What was in New York City? I forget what it was, but it was, I think it was dancing was made legal after 90 years in New York City last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, silly things like that.
Yeah,
like,
they had a cabaret license.
Yeah, here in Indianapolis, you cannot sell your car with a for sale sign in your front yard. Like, it's illegal to just put a for sale sign in your car and park it on your front yard.
Yep.
Like, you have to do it at a...
Or
at
do
a
the process walk. On Sunday.
Right.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. Like all these, like you can't buy beer on Sundays in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
If you run a brewery, you have to sell food. So all the breweries, all the local like breweries have. If they don't have food, you can get a hot dog. They have a packet of hot dogs,
or
because
the,
it's law.
Have you seen the places that have like the $25 hot pocket? Because they serve food,
right?
They don't want to serve it. They really don't want to do it. They just want to do beer. So we have $25 Hot Pockets.
Is that where your favorite place they have?
No, the favorite place I go and get beer on Sundays, usually, they have a food truck out front.
Mm.
And that, we got food.
That counts.
We have food. It's our food truck.
That's cool.
Yeah. Which I would say the brewery, but they don't pay me money to say their name. So if they pay me money to say their name, I would say your name. And you know who you are. You like all my Facebook. You like all my Instagram photos.
Thousands of people listening. You could advertise on this show.
Yeah.
We're taking advertisers, by the way.
Yeah. I could drink your beer exclusively. Yep. Or your sparkling water.
All right, let's move on to the shooting in Texas. Most of you have heard some of the details. I want to, long story short, a gunman, it was a domestic violence situation. A gunman walked into a Texas church and started firing. There was actually an employee, so I'm going to play a couple video clips to give you probably a perspective that you might not have caught. Instead of us just sitting here reading articles about what happened, I think it might give you a perspective to hear from some of the eyewitnesses. This young man basically went into a church. The motive seems to be that he is somebody who perpetrates domestic violence, left his first wife, then married a second wife, and this was the church that her family attended. And it was basically to execute her and ended up executing a lot of other people. So this is a KSAT employee. She was visiting her family. Erica Hernandez was actually across the street as she was visiting her family. It's a very small town in Texas as of 100, you know, hundreds of people. And like 7% of the town was killed in this shooting. So the second worst violent act in a church in Texas after Waco.
Yeah.
So you hear people talk about the worst act of violence against in a church in Texas, the worst gun incident in Texas history. Well, I don't agree with that because Waco, if you really go and you watch some of the documentaries on Netflix about Waco, about what happened, and not conspiracy documentaries, like you don't even need to go watch the Alex Jones feed. You can basically just go watch the National Nat Geo and watch the Waco standoff, mm-hmm. and you see that the FBI, the ATF, Janet Reno, and Bill Clinton basically killed 100 people in a Waco church.
Yeah, in a church, burned them alive, crushed them with tanks.
Yep,
it was a very awful situation. Spoiler: the even the sheriff told him, like, hey, do not.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, don't go up there. And he was the sheriff goes, like, don't go up there in your tank. Don't go up there in, like, uniforms. These people are paranoid about the government. Just go in there in a suit, and they will talk to you.
Right.
That's not what they did.
That's not what they did. And so I think it is. It's not something that the mainstream media is talking about, but I think if you aren't familiar with the Waco standoff, you really need to go and watch some of these documentaries to get or read some books about what happened at Waco, because it set off people like Timothy McVeigh. It set off Ruby Ridge. It set off it had its origins in some of the origins of the Tea Party and the alt-right.
Yeah.
Come from what happened at Waco. They all right, absolutely. These are you kidding me?
Fucking lefties. the alt right is just they're literally alternate lefties. Screw those guys.
All right, so let's go to
say this: after you've seen all those documentaries, then you can watch the Alex Jones one. Don't watch the Alex Jones one first.
Right,
it's like machete order. Put that in the back.
All right, so here is KSAT. This is a town outside of San Antonio. So this is a San Antonio station.
Yes, that's right. We were the first on the scene. Erica actually was the first. So, Erica, when you first got there, what was the first thing you saw?
There was emergency personnel everywhere surrounding the church. At that time, they didn't even have a crime scene up. I immediately went across the street where the neighbors were located and were the ones who saw the suspect as he, they say, first started shooting from the outside of the church and then went inside the church. They said he may have dropped anywhere from 3 to 8 clips as he was firing. He had a lot of ammo on him. He had a mask, and he was in full gear.
Wow. And so what were some of these neighbors saying was their first reaction? How did they react?
They were running for cover because as he was seeing people outside, he started shooting towards our homes as well. One of the neighbor I spoke to, their car had some gunshots to it because he saw them looking at them and trying to get his license plate number. At that point, another neighbor that lived a little further down returned fire toward him, and that's when they believe they hit him, and then he got back into his vehicle and left the scene, and some of those neighbors ended up following him until he reportedly crashed a little further down the way.
Now, what were the emotions that were going through some of these neighbors that you talked to?
They are very panicked. None of these people have ever experienced anything like that. At first, they thought it sounded like fireworks outside. It was just a repetitive sound until they noticed the man outside firing into the church and then walking into the church. That neighbor I spoke to later said after he left the scene that he did go into the church to try to provide aid, and he himself had to exit because it was just too much for him to see. Emergency officials on the scene are telling me there's around 27 possibly dead inside the church right now.
Yeah, we just confirmed 27 are dead. Now, you were one of the first on the scene because you had a connection. Mm-hmm. You have an EMS connection when you first heard it on the radio. You know, what was that like?
It's not something you hear around here. You know, you come out. Came out here this morning. My family lives in the area to have breakfast with my family, and to hear scanners go off and saying all units needed. That's not something you hear down. Something that's not something that's common. And when I got to the scene, it was not something I've ever seen before in this area. I grew up around here in Wilson County, and this is again, this is not something you see every day here, and this is. This is going to be a big hit to this community. And this Sutherland Springs is about 13 miles east of Floresville. It's a very, very small community here. It's a very small town. So for something like this to happen here, it's just, you never think it's going to happen here. And for it to be this town, Sutherland Springs, it's something no one can fathom.
And so you've been to this community. You live close to it. It seems really tight-knit. Again, everyone we've seen has been holding each other, really comforting each other. What can you talk to about that?
The same. I had a lot of people come up to me while I was one of the first on scene, you know, asking questions and wanting to know what's going on, that they had family inside. They needed to know where to go, what to do. At that point, you know, emergency personnel were just taking people off to the side and taking them other places just to try to confirm what they knew and who they knew may have been inside. Again, this is not anything anybody is used to seeing here. I don't think it's anywhere anybody's used to seeing anywhere. in any place, in any town. I mean, we just got through reporting about Las Vegas not too long ago.
Well, I mean, let's not say anywhere because, as Harry pointed out off air, this is a weekend in Chicago, right, Harry? You can talk.
Yeah, not a shooting at a church, just like the death toll.
Yeah, I think what makes this different is that, and not that it doesn't make it any better or worse. I mean, it's the loss of life that's tragic.
Yeah.
What was the final? It was 26 died, and how many wounded?
20 wounded.
20 wounded. The pastor of the church was not there. They had a visiting pastor. That pastor was killed. The pastor was out of town with his wife, but their daughter was killed. The grandmother-in-law of the suspect was killed. The youngest victim, I think, was 18 months old. It's one of those bone-chilling tragedies because you're in a place of worship and you're in a large group and you feel unprotected, although a lot of churches have security. I mean, a lot of synagogues have always had a lot of security. Mosques are starting to get security. I think you'll start to see, you know, my church is a mega church with 3,000 or 4,000 people a Sunday, and they have armed security there. I mean, and police officers. So every church, I think, in this day and age is now starting to put together a security plan because of incidents like this and because of terrorism. But this is a small town church where, you know, we're talking about 40 people in a room, 50 people in a room, and, you know, it's why would you think that you would need security?
Right, yeah.
So
it's an incredible small town.
Right. So the suspect, he had, let's talk about him a little bit. Actually, let's talk about the suspect, because I think this is something that, the gunman was 26, and right. He had a ballistic vest and a military style rifle, and as well as a handgun, as you'll hear later. And this,
two handguns. Yeah.
So when we talked about the Vegas shooting and we talked about mass shootings, The largest death toll is suicide. Second is gun violence. And third, with about 1,700 people, is domestic violence. And 1,700 people a year killed because of domestic violence. And I don't know what's happening. I think my Roku's going off. So if you can hear that, I apologize. It's just it freaked Harry and I out. We were like, are the aliens invading? So
bring me to your leader.
Literally, yeah. Like, I don't know if you can do me a favor while I talk, go find just turn the sound bar off. So please, Harry, get the sound bar. So you have domestic violence is a very serious issue, and it's something that I'm not surprised that this man was married to a woman. He beat her and the child, fractured the 18-month-old skull, was basically convicted of the abuse in the military. He then was discharged one level, like it wasn't a dishonorable discharge, it was the next step down, you know, like dishonorable is the worst, and he was the next step down. And that wasn't put into the database, so he was able to buy a gun. And it is not uncommon that sort of thing happens, sadly, because domestic violence for me is a very sensitive issue, and sexual and domestic violence are two of my trigger points. And it stems from having a friend that I talked to in episode 141 of this show called Amanda's Story, where you can spend 3 hours listening to Amanda's story, where she basically outlines how little help she got from the system. And if you're not a raging anti-state libertarian by the end of that, I don't know what will happen, and the update is just going to piss you off even more. Like, no one would take her police report because, you know, he was friends with the local cops. It doesn't surprise me that the military, which has a very serious problem with sexual assault, didn't take this case of domestic abuse seriously. It's not uncommon for abusers to get guns. And there's two types of domestic abusers. There's the guy that gets drunk, hits his wife, and feels bad the next day. And then there's this guy, the man who perpetrated this crime, a hunter, somebody who hunts their victim, and it spirals. And 90% of the time, according to the local women's shelter that I talked to, 90% of those cases end in one of the people or both of the people dead. And it's a very real issue. And I just don't – in so many of these things, there's so many – like, we want to say do something because right. we don't want it to have happen, Harry. But there's literally no way that more gun laws could have prevented this. There isn't the system that is set up now didn't work, and it failed all of these people. And so increasing the size of the system, I don't understand how that's going to make it work better. It literally, you can't fix issues of the heart. Like, this is a person who is profoundly broken, who grew up in a violent home, allegedly. Like, that's pretty serious stuff. And there's just no guarantee that you're going to walk into your door every day at the end of the day. There's nothing the government can do to protect you from violence and the reality that every person has the capacity for horrible, violent things within them.
Right. The planet Earth is a violent place. But when it comes down to it, there's laws on the books that would have prevented this guy from at least getting the gun the way he did get it.
Right.
If the... You know, the Air Force would have reported it correctly, would have been in the database. You know, he would have, you know, he wouldn't have got that gun that way, at least.
Right.
Would it have prevented the shooting? Who knows? We do not know that. But we know he would have prevented him from getting that gun from that sports store. Because he did try to go get a handgun and others, like the carry permit, but... You know, that was stopped too. So there was a lot of different laws on the books that this guy already got dinged on or would have been dinged on to help, you know, try to circumvent this. There's a lot of different things that should have popped up. You know, like his charge on the difference would have prevented him from getting the body armor. That should have prevented him from getting right. that. But it didn't because it didn't get reported. And besides, the only other law that even then, like if you would just say just remove all guns, there's still no case that, you know, whether or not this person would have had a gun or not, you know,
right.
still would have prevented that shooting, you know. And luckily that, you know, we didn't have a law on the book that prevented all guns because a neighbor did come out and was able to return fire, get him back on. Like most people, like, it's freaking scary to be on a two-way rifle range. It's freaking
right.
scary. And that guy showed how scared he was because that NRA instructor started shooting back at him with his own AR-15.
Yeah, so let's hear this. That guy's name was Stephen Williford, and you're going to hear the voice of Johnny Langendorf. Stephen Williford ran out of his house, started shooting
barefoot,
at him.
Diehard style.
Basically, I've heard it reported that he hit the shooter and wounded him, but the shooter eventually, after these two guys pursued, he killed himself after, you know, he basically shot himself, car wrecked, and then they ran up to the car to make sure, you know, to basically citizen's arrest. I mean, in a place of, like, remote Texas... Mm-hmm. where you may have one police or two police officers, you know, this is what the founders were talking about. Your personal security the Second Amendment exists not only to protect you and your family, but also your community and also from a tyrannical government. And so what these two gentlemen displayed is the second leg of that three-legged stool of the Second Amendment. Of community protection by wounding him because he was shooting people as he went in, he shot people inside, he was shooting people as he came out, and this guy stopped that. And so what you're going to hear is the voice of Johnny Langendorf as he talks to CNN.
Two men shooting at each other.
Yes, sir.
The other hero tells you that this killer just shot up a church. He drives off. He tells you to chase him. You tell me, you say, let's go. Did you have any second thoughts? What was running through your head right then?
Nothing. Get him.
Why?
Because that's what you do.
The other guy. Yes, anything sir. You can tell us about him?
You know, he's very much a hero. He acted quicker than he could think as well. he did absolutely the right thing, which was try and take him down on the scene. From what I know, he was just taking a nap and heard the gunshots and reacted.
What kind of gun did he have?
He had an AR-15.
So they both the killer and the individual you drove had AR-15s.
The killer, from what I heard,
had
a pistol during the firefight.
Right.
Which is the main part that I saw.
And then the guy with you, the other hero, had his own.
Yes, he had his own AR-15. Yes, sir. And he came out. He was barefooted.
He was barefoot.
Yes. Yeah. He had no shoes on or nothing, but he was ready to act. And the moment police got there and everything, you know, he did all the right things.
So you, he looks like Richard Petty, but
cousin, Richard Petty's cousin.
He just basically says, "Well, I didn't think. I just did what I was supposed to do."
Yeah.
I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, you're a very security conscious person. I mean, mm-hmm. what's your take on what those guys did?
That. If put in the same situation, I think I probably would have did the thing. Would I would have performed the same? Probably not. Mm-hmm. That guy had hearing like the interview from the guy with the shooter, he had a lot of good, like, open peace of mind to be able to, act in the situation,
mm-hmm.
to keep calm. I have never been placed in that type of situation. I'd like to believe that I would be able to remain calm and be able to act and to help to stop that type of situation, but I don't know.
Right.
But, It's such a weird position to be in, to watch this guy, like, to think about, one, pick up spare mags, pick up spare bullets, but forget his shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's stuff you see, like I said, in Die Hard. You know, the guy just, you know, John McClane just runs out there, you know, shoeless, you know.
Right.
And watching the whole, like, the situation unfold like that, it was it had to have been like unreal, because like this guy, when he came out of the house, like he had his daughter with him,
right?
He told his daughter to stay in the house,
mm-hmm.
and the other guy was just, you know, driving around,
right?
You know, like, hey, this is going on, see all this is happening, and just have that, and it was like having your world just completely turned on its head just because you turned the corner,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you just kept going straight. You know, that's just been something you saw in the news.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's – there's really – like, when you're going into that type of situation, unless you're really set up and prepared for that, you know, most people would not have been set up fully for that position. That guy, when he came to shoot that guy, he went there to kill and do as much carnage as he could with the Kevlar vest. Because, like, I haven't heard any report – like, some people have seen a lot of reports saying, like, he had plates. Some people said he didn't have plates. I saw reports of Kevlar, but I don't even know if he had good Kevlar or if it was level 1, if it was, like, he actually had a Kevlar vest, like, most handgun rounds wouldn't have went through that vest.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, like...
So luckily the guy had, like, brought out that AR-15.
I don't know how many people are in the church. I don't know that anybody does. I haven't seen that reported, but let's say there are 50 Texans mm-hmm. in there. Somebody in that room probably had a gun.
Most people do not bring their guns to church.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know? Like, have I brought my gun to church? Yes, I have. Did I feel, you know, I kind of felt wrong having my gun in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone there knew I had my gun, they would, like, hey, you know, can you not bring that? And I get it. It's a place of peace, a place of worship, you know.
Right.
Shouldn't bring your weapon. And that's probably also what happened there, is, like, this is a place of worship. A lot of people don't bring their guns. That probably is going to change next Sunday. There's probably a lot of people concealing at church.
Well, it's not just about having firepower. I mean, so much of this is, here's a guy that clearly was known by the community. He wasn't known in the community, but I guarantee that Rick Irvine says it's illegal to bring a gun to a church in Texas. Here's a guy who has a history of domestic violence, who clearly is... You know, who was arrested for beating a dog. Like, the New York Times, there's a New York Times reporter that lives in Colorado, pretty close to a trailer park where he lived. And the guy went out there yesterday to this trailer park. And, like, he said, I listen every morning to the New York Times podcast. I forget what it is, but it's like a yellow and blue cover art. It's really good. It's Michael Barbaro. Sounds like a total, as the kids would say, cuck. But it's really informative to kind of give the background on some of these stories. And so today's was talking to this reporter who went to this trailer park, and he said, you know, a lot of these people are transients. It's like they're people. This is in the middle of nowhere. It's just a gravel park in the middle of Colorado. And most people have gone because it's starting to become winter, but there are a few who are just like their trailers are too decrepit to move. And those people don't want to talk to reporters, let alone because they kind of look like cops. So yeah. Think of Maya, yeah. Where Maya's going to end up in 30 years. And basically, well, he said he did find one neighbor who happened to live right next door to this guy, who's only 26, who had a pit bull chained to a tree or whatever. There wasn't any shade for the dog. And then the neighbors called the police when they saw the guy beating the dog in the head. And he's just clearly a disturbed individual who is known to this woman's family. The whole family probably had an awareness of what was going on if they were separated. And so a discussion in hindsight, I mean, it's always easy in hindsight because people don't want to talk about domestic violence and my wife or my daughter was married to an abusive man and he's a violent individual. And like, who has those conversations? But I think we need to get to a place in society where if you're in a church or you're in a close circle, you know, Harry knows that everything that goes on in my life. And it's because, you know, you have to share community, and part of sharing community is sharing the bad parts of your life. And talking about domestic violence,
yeah,
and getting out of domestic violence and then protecting yourself after you're out of the relationship. These are key things. You know, when Amanda was getting out of her issue, I would sleep at their house for 6 months afterwards to as security. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, just so somebody else would be there.
Right.
And
another person call 911, another person to do something.
Exactly right. You know, one of us would grab the kids and escape. Mm-hmm. The other one would go confront this guy. Yeah. Like, you know, and you have to have a plan. And I think now maybe the conversation needs to extend to the communities. But that's the horrible part about domestic violence is that it makes a lot of people a prisoner, not just the woman and the children or a man in the rare cases that actually takes place, but also family members, and there's places you can't go and there's things you can't do because of people's violent behavior. And it's an absolute tragedy. All of this is an absolute tragedy. And you got to really think about who you're getting into a relationship with. Yeah. I mean, you got to have yourself really rock solid in terms of your emotional life before you choose to get involved with somebody like this, because it's one wrong choice, man. It ruins the rest of your life.
Yeah, and you've also got to be like unsure on yourself to be able to recognize that type of situation too.
Yeah.
You know, there's no need for you to go in a situation if you, one, don't know yourself, don't love yourself, mm-hmm. and can't recognize that.
Yeah.
Because you could just be a codependent, not recognize any of those symptoms until it's too late.
Guilty.
You know? And, you know, and it goes for both genders. A lot of, think of, there's a lot of, you know, men that were like, probably poisoned to death from the same type of domestic violence and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably, doesn't it also go with just heterosexual couples? This is also, there's a lot of domestic violence in the gay community. But, you know, it's just more of a, like, just it's part of the human condition. And a lot of it stems from like, like you always go onto is our traumas and our inability to discuss and to be able to deal with our traumas.
Yeah. That's where it comes from. I mean, it really comes down to emotional health. So mm-hmm. much of these discussions are about emotional health. And, you know, the left just wants to make it about the weapon. And it's just,
right.
You know, after the truck incident in New York City with the terrorist, the Uzbekistan guy drove a truck. Or is, the former presidential candidate, Herman Cain, would say, Uzbeki, Beki, 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 Stan.
He should have been president.
He, you know, they were there's a movement to ban trucks in major cities, which is just ridiculous. Like, that's where you need trucks the most to transport goods.
First off, if we could ban rolling coal, take that, Aaron.
Yeah.
But, you know, but.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that at least they're consistent on that. Give them the consistency points. They want to ban something because they want everything to be controlled. You know, like, it's trying to make the world so safe.
Yeah.
And I get it. I get the pursuit. Mm-hmm. I get the pursuit. That's a noble pursuit. But at what cost?
Well, I think Ben Shapiro in his latest podcast had an interesting point about some of this. You know, the left looks at human beings and they say, fundamentally, human beings are good. If we could just get rid of these certain circumstances, we could have perfection. Hmm. And human beings are going to not commit acts of violence, of gun violence, if we don't have guns. They distill it down into the tool that is being used, whereas libertarians, conservatives, people on the right more look at it like, no, people are complex. Mm-hmm. They're good and bad. There are good and bad. There's good and bad in everybody. Like, I think for me, I really, libertarianism not only became a political philosophy, but also a life philosophy for me, because it taught me that there isn't a binary. Like, before, when I was a Republican, everything was just good or bad.
Right.
You were left or right, good or bad, broke or mm-hmm. rich. Like, there's no complexity to the world when you're a Republican, and you're just thinking in all these basic terms. Like, libertarians, when I became a libertarian, I started to really see the complexity of human beings, like, in human interactions, because once you start to put the individual at the center of your philosophy and start taking responsibility for your own core actions, that's when you start to see the complexity. And libertarians and Republicans go, it isn't about the gun at all, because this guy was going to kill them with a bat. He was going to kill them with a knife. He was going to kill anybody he could in whatever way he wanted. In Amanda's story, the ex-husband tried to kill with a bat.
Yeah.
You know, and then saw a shotgun in his face and came back 3 hours later with the bat and a crowbar. Like, that's the level of insanity that is going on with these abusers. And that's the problem. It isn't the tool that is the issue. It is the fact that human beings will never be perfected, and society will never be perfected. You're not going to get a perfect outcome. And in fact, the more you try to use the government to create a perfect outcome, the more you're going to pervert the incentives that human beings engage in and create bad outcomes. And so you look at it and go, well, we tried it your way and it failed. Like, you're talking about the United States military,
mm-hmm.
the VA,
mm-hmm.
the local and federal agencies, the gun registry, like, all of it failed. Like, none of it worked, so we're going to argue for more of what didn't work. So, and I'm not saying there's a solution, because I don't think there's a solution, and that's the bad part about this. Like, I'm supposed to sit here in front of a microphone. Harry and I are supposed to give you libertarian solutions to these problems, and sometimes you just have to say there isn't. The only answer is to fix emotional issues in society. And try to deal with people on a level that is healthy. And it's moments like this where you realize what is your duty to society. And that's why it's so disappointing. So many, like Keith Olbermann and some of these other people, like, I ran it a couple years ago about vibes and prayers. I think it's kind of nonsense to wish somebody good vibes. Like, you're just ashamed to say prayer. You're just ashamed to talk about your religious faith. Especially Christians are ashamed because you don't want people to judge you. So somehow it got morphed into healing vibes, which literally is a prayer, you know. And so thoughts and prayers became, you know, now it's like a punchline. So everybody after, in the wake of the shooting, it started a little bit after Vegas, but now, like, the left is this faux outrage, like, take your thoughts and prayers and shove them up your ass, Paul Ryan. Well, 94%, I need to pull up the actual statistics on this, but I think it was 94% of people in the last 3 months, according to Barna Research, have said they prayed. And 55% of people, according to the Pew Research, say they pray every day. So this is a praying nation, and it isn't a solely Christian thing. Prayer is something that almost everybody does in whatever way that they do it, and they do it to make themselves better. Like, it's times like these when you should be praying, because praying recenters you and rededicates you to being a better person. And you know, in almost every faith, prayer is about humbling yourself before your God and offering yourself as a sacrifice and a tool of their design. And that prayer then has the ability to move. Like, God's not, it's not like God is going to go, oh, Chris Spangle's talking to me, I'm going to do what he wants now. That's not how it works. It's literally like you're in the right relationship with your God. And so therefore he's going to move in your favor. And so, if you're a person of faith, then you believe in prayer, and if it's real, then it works way better than whatever self-righteous bull-ass tweet that Keith Olbermann is trying to put out there. Like, he's like all these people bashing Christianity, which isn't smart when an atheist just walked in and shot up a Christian church. Like, it's such a bad political move to try and bash what most people, like, most people aren't you, Keith Olbermann. Most people are not you, Chelsea Handler. Like, most people are people of faith. Maybe they're not Christian. Maybe they're not, you know, but they are spiritual. So yeah. It to me is just such a bad strategy and so insulting when you're going to bash people's religion when the whole point of prayer is trying to be better. And that's what we need at this exact moment.
Yeah. Well, those type of people are always stuck in their echo chambers and stuck in the coast and stuck in their they have an ocean by their window, so they are smarter than flyover country people.
Right.
So they know more than you, and your Bible Belt is stupid, but please vote for us and our candidates.
Right.
But, yeah, it's – to go back to some of your points, it's the thing that you get – from what I think really happens to a lot of libertarians is that you really start thinking critically. And it's always sad when you see libertarians not thinking critically, because it's like you have to be a critical thinker to be a libertarian. It's just something that kind of goes with it. It's when you start looking at different things of it's not a some things are questions of facts or questions of judgments, where you have to make the best judgment. There's several different ways to do something, and you try to find the best way. And granted, libertarians are going to judge things just by liberty, not from other different facts. And you'll see a lot of different libertarians that'll go like, you know, they're good, you know, commies are bad, da-da-da-da-da. I was like, yeah, their implementation of a lot of different things are bad, but they can also have good solutions. You should probably read up on their stuff. You won't become a socialist if you read their book. You just know their position.
Exactly.
And once you know their position better than them, you can destroy them easier. When it comes to Chris Murray's point here in the chat, a lot of people are very lazy thinkers. So it's easier for them to regurgitate and memorize information than it is to take something inside, make it their own words, and regurgitate it, and then say something with their own principles intact. A lot of people, it's so much easier to take in a talking point and shoot this talking point back out. It's reason why you get chants like, homopho, anti-gay, KKK, Nazi, da-da-da. It's right. So easy to say stuff like that. Without critically thinking like what's into that.
It's like calling I was watching Joe Rogan talk to Eric Weinstein. It was a good one. Very nerdy guy. Very nerdy. Very I would watch it on YouTube because it's boring if you were listening to it, I think. He basically is somebody who I think he has a writing association somehow with Ben Shapiro. And Ben Shapiro wears a yarmulke all the time. Like, Ben Shapiro is a very faithful Jew. So is Eric Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And, like, all these leftist writers just start writing about how they're Nazis.
Right.
It's like, okay, so the two guys who were anti-Trump and very, like,
very
Jewish,
very Jewish,
are Nazis. It just does. It's so silly. I don't get it.
Yeah, and some stupid Nazi alt-right lefty losers started to troll Ben Shapiro's sister, so, like, which is awful, awful people, and it just shows you how, like, those tactics are, you know, they're freaking lefties.
Well, so here's, if make another point before I move on to a different sort of connected topic.
Oh.
If you were going to.
No, just like, you know, like, no, I'm just going to just call them, you know, that's all I had on that. Are you talking about just, like, wrap it up on the shooting thing?
Or No. We'll come back to the shooting because I want to make another point, but I think I want to highlight something that goes into this beautifully, which is this makeup artist in Turkey and all the cultural appropriation stuff from Halloween still left over. And so there's this makeup artist. This is on Ranker.com, which I will explain in a moment. And let's see, what's the title of this? This white makeup artist made a tutorial transforming herself into a black woman, and the internet is outraged. Michelle Naughty, N-A-T-I, wrote this. And let's just read this bad writing together, if we can.
Please don't.
When Persim Akin, a makeup artist from Turkey...
Butterball? Or
No, like the country where they probably don't... I'm sure a 20-something Turkey resident probably doesn't know much about American slavery 250 years ago.
Istanbul, not Constantinople.
She probably doesn't know Turkey? About the whole Al Jolson thing. Posted a racially charged tutorial of herself in Halloween blackface. She was met with consternation from around the globe. Bloggers, and social media users breathed a collective "this again" sigh as Akin tried to explain herself. But as with other people who have feigned or claimed ignorance on the topic, she was dragged by social media to the point where she deleted her accounts, at least for a little while, and with good reason. While things seem to have blown over, there are still people, especially at this time of year, who are posting costumes of themselves as different races. And that is not and has never been okay. There are plenty of things on Halloween that you could get you into trouble, and the costumes are some of them. These bad makeup ideas are offensive, and the Turkish makeup ideas are artist blackface, blah, 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 blah. She just basically the thing that got her is that she put slave, hashtag slave, in the hashtags. But, I mean, she looks I don't know, kind of African. She looks cute, but she's a makeup artist.
Well, she's from Turkey, so she's probably not white. First off,
right.
Second thing, my sister and I got a theory about this.
Okay,
it's more my sister than I. She thinks that slave hashtag slave is a typo from the autocorrect or something. It's a typo, and she was trying to go Beyonce and go slay.
Oh, all right, maybe
she's trying to slay.
I mean,
slay,
because
trying to go Beyonce.
She,
because it's nice makeup, so she's probably trying to slay.
So she is trying to slay. No, like.
So who knows?
Here's the truth behind this, and this is what everybody
she
needs.
Yeah, she did have 20 hashtags on. So yeah, she could have like, I accidentally took a picture of the RX-8 one time and went Mazda, and I was like, oh crap! There's like 3,000 other people have done it too, so I just kind of left it.
So here's the truth about these sites: things like Ranker, Provider, a lot of these clickbait sites. There's a guy that I just could not care for. I don't like him. His name is Amiri King. I think he's divisive, and he is one of these people who just shit posts to get you to click on clickbait, and he's making $2,000 a day, I found out, by doing this, by just being as offensive as possible by posting these sites like Ranker, Provider, all these different sites. And what happens is these social media guys get in bed with these sites through agencies, and they have these writers who just write the most, you know, outrageous thing possible. So then the social media troll can then take it and can you look at this bullet? I can't believe this, blah, 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 blah. And then everybody makes money off of the, you know, you go to a site like Ranker and just look at all the ads that you can accidentally click on.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how they all get paid. And so, you have all these people who grew up, you know, in the last 20 years, went to New York City because they watched Sex and the City and they want to be Carrie Bradshaw and they want to go and, you know, and on the opposite coin, they want to be Hunter S. Thompson, and they would go to New York City and they're trying to be writers and they're trying to get started, but they went to like a private college in Nebraska with 1,200 graduates total, like, and nobody cares about their degree. Nobody cares about them. And so they go to New York City and they get a job writing, and they get a job writing at some sort of clickbait mill, and they just tried to troll the internet to find outrageous things. This makeup artist has 5,000 Instagram followers. Like, this is a non-story. This is not somebody that is going to bring back blackface. You know what I mean? Like, this is not somebody that is going to influence a lot of people to start dressing like Al Jolson. She was not trying to be offensive. Her intent was not to offend. Her intent was to honor, if you believe what she says. So it's really just manufactured outrage for profit, and we've got to stop buying into it and stop sharing this stuff. It's like, that's what all the kneeling stuff is about. It just, that's what Trump is doing. And like, Trump understands all of this, and that's why he's mastered it to such an effective he's mastered it all the way to the White House. So we have to stop buying into this manufactured outrage. It's just all bullshit.
All right. Two things. Mm-hmm. One, for those people that's like, ah, ads, you're tired of ads, and you've got your ad blocker, and you still sometimes get ads. I'll probably should record a video on this, but if you use the tech guys out there, you go to the website, they'll show you how to do it. You go to OpenDNS, they will show you how to put a ad blocker DNS on your home router, which is really, really cool. It's also very good for people with kids. It'll help you also filter your content through OpenDNS, especially if you pay for it. It even gives you alerts if a device on the network is accessing bad sites. You get a list of all that stuff on there. Like I said, I'm just going to go quick on that, move on. I'll do a later video on that. Next thing I go is, like, I figured you wanted to move to New York City and be a carry. I knew you were carry.
I'm more of a Samantha, honestly.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm definitely not the redhead. What was she? Miranda. I'm definitely not a Miranda.
No, yeah.
Going back to the gun thing, the other thing that's driving me crazy is that people don't really understand the politics of the gun debate, and it's actually not Republicans. Like, so Chelsea Handler has this incredibly misguided, stupid tweet, as Chelsea Handler does. Chelsea Handler is unfunny. She's not clever. She's not smart. She's just gross, yeah. And she's just, I hate her so much. Like, I
won't go away.
Coming from the comedy industry, it's like, just awful. And it's not because she's a woman. It's that she's not funny. She has no talent. You know how she got her show on E? She was dating the guy who was head of E at the time. And that's how she got her show on E!
Be careful, that's how you get shut down Gamergate. But yeah, just like everyone was like, Amy Schumer was funny when she was allowed to make fun of herself and she was allowed to be silly. That's when she's funny.
Right, not trying to hold up a movement. So right.
That's when she became unfunny. I'd be like, what happened? Yeah, she stopped. You know, that's what's funny. It's people make fun of themselves.
That happens to every major stand-up. Like, they get to, it's not Amy Schumer's sex that makes her not funny. Right. I mean, she was funny. She's not funny anymore. It happened to Eddie Murphy. It happened to Dane Cook. It happens to all these guys. You get to a certain point where you now get above where you were, and you don't have, like, you're on a different level. You don't, like, if you're a comedian, you don't want to get like to Adam Sandler level.
Yeah.
Because then what happens is your stand up, you get huge, you make a ton of money in movies, and then all of a sudden everybody starts attacking you, and then you're done.
I would take the Adam Sandler checks, though.
Hell yeah.
I'd get to Adam. I'll take Adam Sandler.
It's exactly right. Like, I don't mind being Dane Cook, but,
you know, I'd be Adam Sandler or Dane Cook, yeah.
Yeah, like, if your craft is stand-up comedy. But so Chelsea Handler writes on November 5th around 2:30, so Sunday, shortly after it happened, innocent people go to church on Sunday to honor their God, and while doing so get shot and killed. In what country? America. Why? Republicans. Well, Chelsea, let me tell you, it's actually, you're not right in any way, shape, or form. The reason that further gun control never in the history of the country gets enacted is because of moderate Democrats. And moderate Republicans are usually the ones who give safe harbor to the discussion, but it's moderate Democrats in swing states like Indiana and a Joe Donnelly who, you know, or a Joe Manchin in West Virginia, or the Democrat that's the senator or governor of Montana, like, has him shooting guns in all of his commercials. They are the ones who keep any kind of your legislation that you'd be for from passing. So blaming Republicans is really a dumb thing. It's totally dishonest, and it's totally ignorant. And that's exactly what we would expect from Chelsea Handler when she's commentating on political issues. And people keep going after the NRA, but the NRA is made up of 4 million members.
The NRA makes money off of gun regulation. That's how they make their money.
Explain that.
Just like if they were to put a test into the get your concealed carry permit, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the United States government has no way to test all 50 states to go to a test to be able to run that test, the only people that could do that would be the NRA. An NRA conducted test. You would have to sign up and go to the NRA to get their test. They would make money off that testing situation. Right now, they still make money because they do offer great, you know, like safety classes. They're voluntary. You can go to them. Or in a lot of different states that you have to go to their safety courses.
Right.
You know? Just like, and I was like, well, they wouldn't make that much money off that. It's like, yeah, then make enough because they'd probably write it in that you would have to get retested every 2 years. They'd make a money making scheme off this thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've got it sitting there in the books. But, you know, that's how they would, you know, and all the hysteria, they make money off that. But that's all they are. And there's other gun lobbying groups out there.
Right.
You know, that does different things. The other thing is there's already a gun control compromise on the books. There's common sense. We already have common sense gun control. We, you know, the compromise was no automatic rifles. As much of an anarchist as I am, I was like, yeah, I could compromise on that. Then automatic rifles are freaking dangerous. I've sat next to people who fire those suckers. It's so freaking dangerous.
Yeah.
Next to idiots.
In every libertarian's mind, there's always like that one thing where you're like for me, it's the smoking ban. Like, you know, I'm not for the smoking ban, but I wouldn't mind it. I kind of like that we have cigarettes.
How dare you, sir?
You know what I mean?
How dare you?
Not for private clubs.
Now,
you know, but
I'm all for, if someone wants to, I'm not for banning anything. If you want to have an automatic weapon, I'm all for it. I just think they're dangerous.
Right.
I just think they're freaking dangerous.
Right.
Because a lot of people are kind of stupid. You know, people are dumb.
Right.
But on the books, that's a great compromise. No automatic rifles. We can compromise on that. Cool. What about common sense? Hey, just want to do background checks on purchasing guns? Sure. How about that? Got to be 18 years old to get a gun? Sure. Okay. These seems like okay compromises.
Right.
Okay. These are compromises bought into their system. Do I like them personally as Harry? No. But are they a compromise? If I had to make a decision, gun to my head, heck yeah, those are some compromises. I could do with these compromises. You know? But, you know, and that's the other problem is that a lot of the Democrats, they don't know the laws in the books. And when they go to talk about it, they're just so ill-informed. They just don't know.
Right.
And it's like, and that type of thing that is frustrating.
Well, and there really isn't any compromise with them. And that's, and we're all kind of stuck in the middle. But like, what the left wants is just full confiscation.
Right. And they try to set it like, well, that's a fallacy. You're at a slippery slope factor. You want a slippery slope this thing. I'm like, No, this isn't a slippery slope. This is what you want.
This is what you're saying. This is what every one of your supporters, right? Like, what do you think? What's the logical conclusion of what like a Chelsea Handler is saying?
Mm-hmm.
Innocent people go, they get killed and get shot. Why? Because Republicans. Like, the argument that she is advancing is that Republicans are in bed with the gun lobby and they're flooding the country with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are getting killed because of gun owners, and therefore we need to get rid of the guns. It's what we talked about earlier. Like, they think that they can progress us
mm-hmm.
to a certain point in society, and it's a utopian fantasy. We live in a country where there are more guns than people. You're never going to confiscate all the weapons. You're never going to ban the sale of weapons.
Right.
Like, what I thought was actually, it wasn't clever in a way that I liked it, but it was clever, like, oh, you got us. you got us. Mm-hmm. Like, was when Obama had all the federal agency buy all the bullets. Like, there was no reason that the federal government needed it. Like, the IRS and the Department of Homeland Security and all these, they didn't need the bullets that they bought.
No.
And but they completely used free market economics and the endless supply of money that they have right. to create a shortage. And that's the kind of action that we'll see, you know, anti-gun politicians like Barack Obama continue to take, where they'll use the force of government to screw with the free market.
Yeah.
Or it's not a free market. It's the most regulated industry in the country.
Which was cool during that time. You saw a lot of small ammo manufacturers get big during this time. I started to buy ammo through like some small manufacturers. There's one, they went out of business, but I loved their ammo.
Yeah,
and they would deliver it to my house. I would give like feedback because there's such a small company. I could give them feedback, and I go like, you know, there's a, you know, like I love your ammo, but like there's a lot of muscle flash out of this sucker, you know. And then, and you know, and next thing I know, I got another box that came to my door. They're like, hey, we fixed that.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I started firing like, this is awesome. This is great. Send me, you know, yes, like, send me more. Keep sending me bullets.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And it was very sad when they went out of business.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, it is. Prohibition never works for anything. Prohibition didn't work for booze. Prohibition isn't working for drugs. Prohibition isn't going to work for guns. Like, it is. Yeah. It just comes down to ignorance. And, like, I'm ignorant of most firearms.
Yeah.
But I've been around them. I've never shot a gun. I'm not opposed to it, but like I've been to gun shows. Like I'm ignorant in that I don't know as much as you,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time I know what I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to talk to people who do know what they're talking about.
Yep.
And then I go, "Oh, okay, that seems to make sense." But I would say all the same things that all your liberal friends are saying on Facebook until I became executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. And then I knew I couldn't say those things because of political expediency. But instead of like being a hypocrite, I was like, I'm just going to open myself up to learn about this stuff. And I'm going to go to gun shows and I'm going to hear what they have to say. And I really, by being around gun owners for the first time in my life, went, this isn't scary at all. Like, I'm just being ignorant. Like, there's this whole world that I don't understand, but just because I don't understand it, it doesn't mean that I need to be afraid of it.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't be afraid of the world. Just poke into it. It's a tool like anything else.
Yeah.
I like how there's like, no, drunk guns should not be made illegal. Guns make people dumb. Without guns, people get smart. They get creative, and I don't like when people start getting smart because the humans are dangerous when they start having to get to make weapons.
Well, here's what the left – the left makes libertarians and gun owners and conservatives out to be gun-crazed fanatics. But I bet if you really sat down and had a conversation with almost every libertarian, they would all say if in a perfect world we could get rid of all guns and you could get rid of violence, I'd be more than happy to get rid of my guns. Like, but that's just not the world that we live in. Like, it's not that libertarians are bloodthirsty and want as many weapons as possible. They want as many weapons as possible because it's a hobby and it's cool to shoot them.
Right, and it pisses off leftists.
And it's fun. But, like, they don't do it because they're starting a war.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
There's some, but
idiots.
Right.
Idiots. Idiots that get expunged and kicked out of the movements, different projects in New Hampshire. They get kicked out because they want to expunge too much violence.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, in a perfect world, yeah. But the strong – if you ever ask me to disarm, the strongest among us must disarm first.
Right.
If you have the most guns, you must disarm first before I ever get rid of one of mine.
Exactly.
It is pointless to ask someone who is weaker than you to disarm first.
So that leads us into our final topic. We had a lot prepped, but this was a good conversation.
Became a Thursday show.
But I feel like, kind of, but that's all right. We've got a fun Thursday show. I've got Shane Zollner and Dakota Davis from the Boss Hog of Liberty coming on. We're going to talk party infighting and my scuffle with the national chairman of the Libertarian Party.
They're like twins. just get him to wear the same shirt.
That's going to be the prettiest podcast that we've ever had.
And then you on it to balance it out.
Well, no, I'm the best looking of the three.
But
you'll see why on the. I'm also going to visit my lesser kingdom, the Boss Hog of Liberty, tomorrow night. So make sure if you aren't liking the Boss Hog of Liberty Facebook page, go do that. I will be live on their Facebook page with them tomorrow night as I join them for their podcast, and we talk about Dakota's bachelor party and all the fun that I'm sure Jeremiah didn't let them have. Be sure to check that out. I will be visiting. Christy Avery's going to chauffeur me over to the Boss Hog of Liberty as well.
Nice.
faster, Christy. So speaking of disarming, Rand Paul basically became a libertarian parable. he literally forever libertarians at outreach events have been, well, if your neighbor comes over and you're lying, then you have the authority to go over and violate their nap after they've violated your property. Like, he literally began. So basically the story's an out there, but I think what happened is that Rand Paul built McNukes in his backyard and he accidentally put his nuclear arsenal 5 inches over the line onto his neighbor's property, and then what was then it became a fight. So, like, a really weird story. Something's not adding up here, and I don't know what it is, and the fact that Rand Paul doesn't want to talk about it means that, like, these two dudes hate each other.
Yeah.
And so they're in Rand Paul lives near Bowling Green, Kentucky, and he lives in a hoity-toity gated community, which is hilarious because you live in a gated community to keep people from breaking your ribs and attacking you.
Let's be honest. His wife wants to live there. You can tell by this whole story, like, he doesn't want to live there.
Right. And so he's in this gated community, and he is an ophthalmologist. He works on eyes, for those of you who don't know what ophthalmologist is. And a retired anesthesiologist who lived next door ran and tackled him and broke 5 of his ribs and bruised his lungs. And, Harry, I've broken a rib before. I broke a rib in 7th grade playing football. It was the most painful thing that I have ever experienced in my life, and that includes emotionally.
I've never broken a bone. I've got very dense, you know, black people bones.
Black people
they
bones.
They don't break.
Luckily, he didn't danger to that extra one in your ankle, right?
Correct, yeah. Lucky he didn't, like, because he's an anesthesiologist, lucky he didn't, like, try to Bill Cosby him and get him back that way.
So they say it's over a landscaping dispute. Rene Boucher... Rand Paul was mowing the grass and wearing sound muting earmuffs, and he didn't realize Bobby Boucher was coming at him. We're calling him Bobby Boucher, and basically, yeah, he went. But like, don't you talk about my mama? And so he ran after him. He never saw him coming. One friend said. And the damage was severe. 5 broken ribs, bruised to the lung. Kentucky state trooper showed up. The senator had small cuts on his nose and mouth and had trouble breathing. The 59-year-old was charged with a misdemeanor count of assault. And they're considering raising it to a felony, given the severity. Rand Paul's 54, which I didn't know. I thought he was... I mean, I guess I realized he was in his 50s, but it doesn't seem like... Like, 60 used to be really old.
Yeah.
And now 60 just doesn't seem that old anymore.
It's not because of Ron Paul and Bernie. But I doubt if he runs for president again, he won't deny that Secret Service detail.
Yeah, exactly. The senator grows pumpkins on his property, compost, and has shown little interest for neighborhood regulations. Yeah, no shit. He's Rand Paul. Like, you knew what you were getting. Like, if I was...
Oh, yeah, broken jaw, too. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, that's new.
That's what someone said. Someone said broken jaw. Chris Murray said broken jaw.
All right. Maybe. But I don't
hear about that, yeah.
I cannot verify that, but either way, it's painful for the ribs. Yeah. But homeowners associations and all these regulations, they're all just so annoying. Yes, like, they're just I could never live in a place with an HOA. Because I would do exactly what he did. Oh, I can't compost? Okay, here's my giant pile of shit. I can't grow pumpkins? Oh, I'm basically putting a Linus statue in the backyard.
I remember growing up, I had to build like a fence for the compost pile. I decided to paint the mailbox one day because it was ugly. I didn't like it. I didn't ask my parents. I just, you know, I had a bunch of gold can of gold paint because of Boy Scouts from the Derby.
Right.
So I just, yes, I painted my Derby car gold. Get over it. So I decided to paint the mailbox freaking gold. I thought it looked sharp, and we got a letter in the mail.
Oh, Chris said he broke his jaw.
Okay.
Competing explanations of the origins of the drama cited stray yard clippings, newly planted saplings, and unraked leaves.
Stray lawn clippings?
Stray yard clippings. And
Violet Manep.
Bobby Boucher lives alone, has for 17 years. They worked at the same hospital. So, like, and Bobby Boucher is, like, a hardcore, like, Glenn Beck's people found out that he had liked the Occupy Wall Street page, which... I like 10,000 pages on Facebook. I've had a Facebook page for 15 years. I'm sure that when something happens to me and somebody goes and looks at my Facebook page, you can pick out, like, I follow Barack Obama, and it's because I wanted to see what Barack Obama says. It doesn't, just because he follows Occupy Wall Street doesn't mean that he is an Occupy Wall Street. He's an anesthesiologist, which out of all the doctors, they make the most money.
Yeah.
You know, he's a rich dude. He's probably not down with the Occupy Wall Street kids banging drums in New York City, not washing his feet for 70 weeks.
He probably just wanted to hear the news about it because he's in freaking Kentucky. But
right.
I figured that's the main reason why you won't run for president when you hit 35 is because you're scared of what they'll dig up.
Oh, but, yeah. As some people in our group chat have seen, the screenshots from our private group where we make jokes are alone enough to kill me.
Well, the other thing is, like, he's lucky it was Rand, not Ron Paul, because Ron would have, like, you know, like, backflipped on him and, like, really beat him up. He would have been awful.
Yeah. Ron?
Yeah.
Ron is very spry, and he's got an anger in his heart. I can tell he's a very sweet man, but he has an anger in his heart that burns. And he would just look at him.
Waiting for the nap violation.
I think that Ron, yeah, as soon as you violate his nap, in his mind, he would transpose Henry Paulson's face onto his face. Ben Bernanke! And then bam! And then it was just all over.
He got It Man on him.
I mean, basically, Rand has the right under the non-aggression principle and that's what NAP means, non-aggression principle. For you new people, that is the foundational principle of all libertarianism. The non-aggression principle means that you are not to you're not to harm another person, steal their property, defraud them. If they do that to you, then you have the right then to defend yourself, but you do not have the right to impede other people or interfere in their life. And so in this, every Libertarian Party person takes the non-aggression principle pledge because Nixon thought the Libertarian Party in the 70s was a bunch of commies trying to overthrow the government, and that was their way to institute that they were Americans and not terrorists.
Did all of them take the non-aggression principle pledge?
If you're a Libertarian Party member, you have to have signed it. And it came in handy because Timothy McVeigh was a Libertarian Party member, and Rob Shuford at the time came out and said, "Yeah, he's not a Libertarian because he violated the NAP." So the non-aggression principle applied here is now that Rand has had 5 ribs broken, he gets to light Bobby Boucher's house on fire and destroy his world. So the GQ, which is an article, is funny that you said they just basically, well, it turns out that Rand Paul's a bit of an asshole about his yard.
Yeah, he clearly does not want to live there. He'd rather probably, you know, be happier, like, out in the sticks somewhere, you know. That's probably why he lives in Kentucky, but his wife said, we need to live here.
All right, so let's read what GQ says.
Well, maybe I could be reading that wrong. I could be wrong. That probably is where Rand probably just likes to tick off people.
He does seem like a shit poster.
Yeah.
Yeah. GQ writes, so let's read between the lines a bit here. Rand is an asshole neighbor. He bought a house in a neighborhood that has certain rules with regard to lawns, and he decided that he doesn't need to follow those rules because of his belief in quote-unquote property rights, which I don't know why they need to put that in quotes, that don't actually exist. Wait, GQ says property rights don't actually exist.
They don't exist. So I'm going to... So can we start calling the podcast GQ now?
This is by a guy named Jack Moore, and you look at his picture, he's, you know, he's just one of these skinny little dudes with nerd glasses and a nerd beard, and yeah, this dude's
find his house and start moving in.
You're not Hunter S. Thompson, you dick.
I guess it gets me over all these. I'm sorry, I have all these stinking leftists that want to be Hunter S. Thompson and stuff like that, but they stay in safe New York City or they stay in their hometown. I'm like, dude, he would not be here right now. Hunter S. Thompson would probably be in a, you know, like driving around in some beat up, crazy looking car and just driving around in reverse, especially how cheap, and you get cell phone signal everywhere, you type anywhere. Shoot, you think he'd be in town right now writing for GQ?
I would imagine Jack Moore is a male feminist.
He would just have a Twitter page and people would just follow that.
Libertarians don't want to follow the rules that we as a society have agreed upon because they feel those rules step on their freedoms. And sometimes they might even be right, but that doesn't mean that they are above those rules and can do whatever they want. Now, I don't want to excuse the other side of this, even though I kind of am, because I hate libertarians and I don't understand them. One of the problems with Democrats is we've never met government oversight that we didn't like, and there's a good metaphor for Democratic politics and the obnoxious homeowners association rules that drive everyone crazy. So it sure seems like this Bobby Boucher was also an asshole who cared way too much about what his other neighbor's yard looked like. I guess it was about politics after all. Bobby Boucher clearly was just successful and rich, and so he's bad. Like, okay. Libertarians don't want to follow the rules that we of a society have agreed upon because they feel those rules step on their freedoms.
Yeah, right? Yeah, just
yes, he's not wrong, but
I didn't agree to these rules. I was born into this,
and I have the right to leave. I just have accepted that when it comes to government,
you don't have the right to leave.
I can leave.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Don't you tell me I can't do it.
You cannot. You do not have the right to leave. The United States government can say no, and when you do leave, they still demand money.
Well, now I feel like a prisoner in my own home. Yeah. With my two cats. But anyways, long story short, you do have the right to leave if you want to. You can try. Harry says you can't. But
can't leave. Try.
I can leave because I'm white. So my passport's clean.
Oh, no. They definitely won't let you leave.
They will not send me back.
Yeah. Me either. They might let me go. Where are you going? Oh, think about going to Africa one way, right?
So it costs $12,000 or more to expatriate, according to Rick Irvine. So, yeah, that's expensive.
Yeah.
But anyways, yes, we were born into rules that we do not exist and that we did not agree to, but... I haven't fully fleshed this out. So
born into bondage,
basically. But this bondage is way better than North Korean bondage, right?
Yeah.
So listen, I wanted to make this point earlier, but I'll make it now before we start wrapping up. So after I finish this, then I will throw it to you to wrap up. I'm listening to the Genghis Khan series by Dan Carlin on Hardcore History, and I know I'm like a decade late or whatever, but it's worth the $10 at dancarlin.com. You haven't listened yet?
I haven't listened. I just started this week.
Oh, it's so good.
Just started.
So I watched Marco Polo on Netflix, which was really good. It was the first season was really good. The second season, you could tell they cut the budget back because they only have like four tents as their scenery.
Have you watched Spartacus?
No. I tried, but I didn't get into it.
Keep watching Spartacus, but watch it alone in your bedroom.
Okay. Yeah, that's how the first season of Marco Polo was.
Oh, yeah.
It's like beautiful and expansive because it was their Game of Thrones answer. And then the second season, they cut the budget, and so it's like four tents, and then they cancel the third season. But Marco Polo was really good, and so I got interested in Genghis Khan because Marco Polo spent time in the court of Kublai Khan, the grandson of Genghis. And so Genghis Khan was basically one of the greatest human beings that ever lived. He built an empire from basically China from Korea to Spain. Like, it was just up into Russia. It was just this crazy massive empire in the span of 25 years. He's probably the greatest general to ever live. But he's also one of the greatest mass murderers to ever live. I mean, he probably killed anywhere from 10 to 50 million people in those 25 years. And so Dan Carlin calls people like him and Alexander the Great and mm-hmm. Hitler and Stalin these historical arsonists. You know, somebody like Hitler is a historical arsonist where he comes along and just lights the world on fire and completely changes things. And out of that, we get things like Sykes-Picot, where you get the lines are all drawn, and then what we're feeling now, which is a very scary proposition, is the rumblings of the breaking apart of all of that world order that was put in place after the two world wars, where the lines were drawn by the Korean lines were drawn by Dean Rusk, an American lieutenant colonel. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these rumblings of the world about to be set apart, and at some point, maybe in our lifetime, we will see a historical arsonist. It's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not Donald Trump would be a fascist if he could, but Donald Trump is not. This isn't a fascist country. Like, the Supreme Court isn't letting him get away with whatever he wants with his travel ban. So, you know, he's not that historical arsonist. A dog is there's two dogs fighting outside my door, and Mittens just ran over to the door to see what's up. Mittens, my 10-pound cat, thinks that she's going to boss them around and get them right. Straight.
We're getting swatted.
So Genghis comes along and basically sets the world on fire and changes the course of world events in the 1200s. And he's also a great lover, as Logan Knoll points out. He many, many, many people are a descendant of Genghis. And so, long story short...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. James Neese included.
James Neese is rapidly approaching.
Yep. He's got Genghis Khan, and he's a 0.01 black.
Yeah. So... he basically goes through the Mongolian Empire and just talks about this, you know, and compares Genghis to the Nazis and really puts it in terms of, yes, you learn history about something like Genghis Khan, and you learn about it in a very sanitary way. You don't really think about the human beings. And it's like right now the Holocaust is still fresh because we're two or three generations removed from the Holocaust. But what about 300 years from now? You know, people write about how Genghis Khan brought about religious peace and was very open and tolerant and helped institute writing in a lot of places that didn't have it. And there are a lot of benefits to Genghis Khan. Well, what happens 200 years from now when people start writing about the benefits of the Third Reich? And, you know, he really hammers home the perspective of like how to look at history. It was just really eye-opening and expanding. And I mentioned it earlier in the episode where you're sitting there talking about, like, if I lived in this same exact spot in 1850 1817, mm-hmm. what would I be going through? I would be chopping wood. I would be surviving. I would be barely surviving. I would probably be dying. Like, I'm watching the end of Marco Polo after listening to Genghis Khan on a day where, on Sunday, where I woke up whenever I wanted to in an air conditioned and heated home with clean air.
Repackaged
firewood. Like, I didn't have to worry about the heat. I didn't have to worry about where I was going to find breakfast. I just walked out. I had all kinds of prepackaged food. I could make delicious pancakes. I had maple syrup. Then later that day, I had Blue Apron, where I was eating like Chinese cabbage and this exotic pasta, and you know, it was this amazing meal that was inspired by three different continents. And I lived in security. I didn't have to worry about the king coming and killing me. I didn't have to worry about it. It really put into perspective like how lucky we are to live in this time and place. And yes, we have these mass shootings, but you're at a much better position than ever in history. Harry wouldn't want to live in 1817. Well, actually, you might, because your people are doing fine.
They were doing fine.
You were selling people, not buying.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's really a great, great time to be alive. You, no matter how poor you are, if you are listening to this on the little computer in your pocket, and you're not that hungry. You're hungry, but you're not hungry. And then if you get sick, you can go to the doctor and you go to Burger King and have a Whopper. Like, you live better than Genghis Khan did. Yep. You know, and
or King George the Seventh.
Exactly.
Or yeah. Or
Henry the Eighth.
Yeah. Most kings. Most,
exactly.
Most kings.
Definitely better than all the peasants. Yeah. So we really need to put our place in the world in a historical perspective. And I'm talking...
And more educated, too.
Yeah, I'm talking to somebody...
Just because you could, just simple fact that you can read.
Yeah, I spent the day... That's part of it, too. Thank you. I was watching documentaries and listening to things about Genghis Khan and then science. And, like, last night, I'm watching this Eric Weinstein thing where he's talking about the history of Indian music and... Mm-hmm. The history of Chinese music and biology, and I'm eating like basically Blue Apron, which I cannot recommend highly enough. I love. I'm eating basically like this weird like version of Chinese cheeseburgers. It's like Chinese steam buns with pork and black bean paste and tempura sweet potato. It's great. It was a great meal, but like I'm just like, this is the greatest life ever. Like, I get to sit here and learn things over the time and space. It's just really incredible, and I don't think that we're appreciative enough of our time in history because we're so addicted to our phones and so like I think there's going to be a serious conversation about putting our phones down at some point because it's ruining the human brain and ruining humanity, and it's ruining my life.
Yep. Rick Irvine is correct. We are kings. Okay, he said it in the chat.
Uh-huh.
Translated for him.
Thank you. Yeah, yes.
We are kings.
We were.
No, we are now because we're not covered
so
in crap.
I really think everybody should go out. Dan Carlin, if nothing else, you owe him $10 for the service that he's done to the world because his show is so great.
It's worth it. It is worth it.
Yeah.
It is more than, you know, it's a better history education than you got through public school.
Yep. And he has got the podcast, Hardcore History. It's free. It's just the old stuff's behind the paywall. So yeah, great stuff. Can't recommend that enough. I would also recommend Jamie Kilstein was the head of Citizen Radio and a progressive podcast. And he was on Joe Rogan, which, God, I wish I could be Joe Rogan when I grow up. So good. And he was talking to Jamie Kilstein, who basically was part of the liberal echo chamber and super progressive and a male feminist. And he basically talks about what a prison that was. And then one of these websites like Jezebel, I think it was, basically turned on him and wrote this article about how he was a male sexual predator and like basically wrote a bunch of lies and it ruined his life. And like now he's contrite about all he's just basically asking, like saying, I was wrong. All that stuff is wrong, and so a really, really interesting conversation, and I can't recommend that enough. Harry, final thoughts for this episode. I've been long-winded. I apologize.
Super long-winded.
Sorry.
Yeah, because I pulled up, you know.
I'm gonna just turn my mic off. You go. You go, boy.
Boy. Whoa.
I meant it in the fraternal way of the 90s.
I'm going to bring that up to wall management later. Whoa.
I hope I don't get in trouble.
We'll see. One thing I wanted to bring up is the we kept talking about the NAP, the non-against principle. I just want to bring it. I've got a very small, concise version of the NAP that I use over time when I have to explain it to somebody. So here goes. Every pony owns his or herself and their labor. No pony else has a higher claim over them. Hitting, stealing, and killing are always wrong, even when the castle guards and soldiers are doing it. Use force only in self-defense, or in the defense of some pony else. Each interaction with other ponies should be on a voluntary basis only. Never use coercion. Like I said, that's a small, like, the concise version of...
That's the virgin version of the... Of the non-aggression principle.
Very, very small, very, 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 very concise. My wrap-up thing is what I wanted to go about is I'm trying to hit everything. With time zones, you have small computers in your pocket. The world is getting to a point that, come on, let's be realistic. Let's get with the times. We have so many old rules on the book, like for some reason we think it's okay to have a bicycle on the road with a 2,000-pound car. This is dumb. They should not be – bicycles should not be next to cars. That's a dumb idea. let's see, with the Texas shooting, I get frustrated and I get sick and tired of hearing all these different stories every time they come up, just like anyone else. I don't want to say like this is just the normal, this is the way it going is, but it's only a tragedy here in the United States because it keeps happening. And it's because it doesn't happen every day. It doesn't happen every week, just like they try to make it sound like. That's why you don't hear about all the deaths happening in Chicago. If you watch, just get a local Chicago news source, like find a station and just watch it and just watch how many people just die in Chicago. It's like, this is not national, but like 20 people, Chicago wished it just had 20 people in a month.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous. Or in any other state, like, it's just in case anyone tries to bring up, like, you know, we need to get rid of guns. You know, they talk about Australia. Well, talk about Mexico, because you're not supposed to have guns in Mexico, and Juarez is not a very safe place.
Right.
There's other places in the world that do the exact same stuff like that. With the Turkish person and the makeup, yeah, I think that was a nothing burger. Also, you know, there's so many racial insensitive things that we do here in the United States that would probably piss the hell off of some people in Europe, especially Eastern Europe, stuff like that. When they use the G word, I'm not going to say it because that's an offensive word. All those people up there of Romani descent, they know exactly the word I'm talking about. And here, stupid Americans use it all the freaking time.
Gypsy?
Whoa, dude. You apologize. It's a very racial insensitive term.
I won't apologize, but that's where the term gypped comes from.
Oh, whoa.
Did you know that?
You're just dropping like racist terms all over this podcast, aren't you?
Everything's racist. I'm exhausted by it. I'm sorry. I just can't do it anymore. Like, I want to treat every person with love and respect, but I can't keep up with everything that's racist.
Well, because race doesn't really exist. The thing that people think is race is just phenotypes, and they stop at a phenotype at a certain point.
Right.
Like, they just want to trace it back to a certain span where they're happy. Like, mm-hmm. Most of my relatives are here in Europe. Yeah. When the Ice Age finally started ending, yeah, they were here. But before that, they were on the equator by Africa.
Right.
Or they were froze to death.
Race is a false construct of society.
Yeah. You know, and there's, you know, like I said, a lot of people, how can I get it? I get into the freaking race realist all the time, and it's just so freaking annoying.
Harry's out there doing battle like you wouldn't believe.
They're annoying. I use sock puppet accounts. I use my Harry account because I like to let them think I'm white when I'm arguing with them. It's more fun that way. It is.
Do you ever like get one of these sock accounts and just say the N-word a bunch just to see like what it's like from the other side?
Yeah, I do. I drop it all the time. I drop it sometimes.
What's the difference in how people react?
I think I'm more shocked when some people don't call me out and freaked out, or they just respond back. That's what freaks me out the most.
That people just, it's normal?
Yeah. They just come back.
No, it's very normal, Harry. Yeah, exactly. When you're not around,
people just drop it? Yeah.
No, I mean, it's true. It's like the Trump on the bus thing. It's like, I got bad news for you. That's how your husband probably talks at work. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I'm like...
Possibly.
It doesn't mean that people are going to take those actions or that they actually mean any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of times people are I mean, like the thing that's crazy is I was watching a KKK documentary on Netflix.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
It's okay. It's not as great as I'd like it to be. But you're just like some of these people you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other people where you're just like, oh, that guy's like a dentist.
Yeah.
You know, you never think about like all the people that you run into in your daily life that are just like super racist or like, well, like they're like some guy and he's just like a slave to, you know,
yeah,
BDSM yeah. slave or something.
Yeah. And then the thing with the South, it's very weird. Like when you start looking at different like things also started happening. One, like in the early 1900s where like, because the South became less racist as it became one more Republican and Christian.
Right.
Two, the South also became less racist when they started discovering like the uneducated Southerner was from a parasite worm that everyone basically had in the South that was eating that wasn't like letting blood go to their brain, so they actually wasn't getting like
Wait, say that again? My brain zonked out, and then I heard you, Parasite.
I can't remember the name of it right now. There's like was a thing like a parasite that people were catching down in the southern states, and it, you know, so that whole idea of like dumb southerner will mostly because that they all got affected by a parasite. It was their brain function wasn't working all the way.
What?
Yeah, it's nuts, crazy
That's
stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And that happened around the same time as racism also started to, you know, slow down in the South as well. It's
Somebody see if you can research that and hashtag Wall News that and put that out there, because that's interesting. I'd love to read that and send that to some of my Southern friends like Bittner.
Bittner, yeah.
Mr. says he has an IQ of 180.
Mm-hmm. He probably does, because his family was probably was held back by this parasite. You know?
He was homeschooled, so he didn't drink the school water.
Right, you know, his family probably got hit with this parasite. You know, like his family's probably like had this highest intelligence at 80, right? But it was like probably was 180, but got the parasite ate it down to 80. You know, just and enough not to eat enough lead chips and made it to that point.
And now he's keto.
Yeah,
and it's all over for him.
Keto sucks. I did keto for a long time, lost a freaking lot of weight, and I'm done with it. I love my rice.
Yeah.
I love my rice. I love sushi. My beer. Oh, man.
Sushi rice is the best.
You know, I just, if I had to, if I wasn't a dad, I'd probably stick on the keto so I can keep the abs out.
But right.
I'm a dad now. I can work on the dad bod. I just have to do curls.
You don't care anymore.
Yeah, I just have to do curls.
Somebody order this man a cookie.
Yeah. The other thing, before I could go, like, shout out to the Discord chat. Like I said, we created a safe starter zone in the Discord chat because we realized when people were coming in, we dropped them right into the DMZ, went hard in the paint with memes, and we were like, huh, maybe we should scale this back and put you in a starter zone, because when you drop in a starter zone, it's just like prison. You've got to figure out what faction you want to be. Do you want to be on the Fourth Reich Thousand Year of Ponies? Or do you want to be, you know, with the PC Gaming Master Race, the Bilderbergers? You know, you got to pick your gang when you jump in the Discord chat. But it's a lot of fun. We have fun in there.
It is.
The only moderation I've ever done in there was the create that channel. So understand that the mods are Rob Galt, who barely does anything, and I'm James Neese. So those are the mods.
And there's a fourth, right?
Christy, who's basically, she's not a mod, she's the super, she's basically super user in there. She's the main person that can ban and kick people out of that chat and delete comments. She has the most power under Dear Leader, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I think
it goes you, Harry, me, and then
I think
Christy.
I gave you the ability to delete the server, not her.
Okay.
I didn't give her the ability to delete the server. I gave you that one. I think that's the only thing that separates you
and
two.
And why would you give Christy Avery, our only super duper fan, that power?
Because I trust her. And she would not allow anything to happen inside that server that, one, will have people send shiny shoe people to my door, and I can trust her, because if something happens and I can't get there, I know she'll act on my behalf, or at least for the good of Wall.
And, right, she's got our back forever, and if Christy Avery deletes you, then you messed up.
Oh, yeah, Christy has. If Christy decides to get on Discord, see something, and ban you, whoa, what did you do?
Christy didn't know she had this power. We shouldn't have told her. It might go to her head.
Oh, no.
Crank call.
She's going to kick Neese out next time.
So this is from PBS. It came from, so we have a Facebook group that we stream the show live to called Dear Leader's Court for everybody who's a $10 a month and up Patreon subscriber. Howie Worm gave the South a bad name. This is from April 2016. For more than three centuries, a plague of unshakable lethargy blanketed the South. Began with the ground itch, a prickly tingling in the tender webs between the toes, and was soon followed by a dry cough. Weeks later, victims succumbed to an insatiable exhaustion and an impenetrable haziness of the mind that some called stupidity. Adults neglected their fields and children grew pale and listless. Victims developed grossly distended bellies and angel wings, emaciated shoulder blades that accentuated by the hunching. All gazed out dully from sunken sockets with a telltale fisheye stare. The culprit behind the germ of laziness, as the South's affliction was sometimes called, was the Nectar Americanus, the American murderer, better known today as the hookworm. Millions of these blood-sucking parasites lived, fed, and multiplied and died with the guts of up to 40% of populations stretching from southeastern Texas to West Virginia. Hookworms stymied development throughout the region and bred stereotypes about lazy, moronic Southerners. As the South rid them of hookworms, these parasites cost the region decades of development and bred widespread misconception about the people who live there. It still exists. So that's really interesting. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It is so interesting how something like that, like you,
crazy.
Like we don't understand, like something like nature can have that kind of societal force, and really shape the course of history. Like we blame it on certain factors, but it's actually like they're sick.
Yeah, they're just sick.
Wow,
just sick.
That's interesting. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, just shout at the disc. Yeah, that's all I want to do. Like,
if you want to join the Discord, you can join at wearelibertarians.com now.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's up on the front page of the website.
Sweet.
So you can find it there.
Now that you got the radio thing, I'm going to see if I can get a bot to pipe the radio feed. You're probably going to mention, I know I'm probably setting fire on that, but the radio feed into the Discord, to a Discord voice channel, so you can kind of listen while you're on Discord.
That's cool. Yeah, so if you go to... WeAreLibertarians.com on the right-hand side, We Are Libertarians Radio there. We're streaming 24/7 all the episodes of We Are Libertarians. You can also get it on Apple Radio within the iTunes app on your desktop. And I've submitted it to TuneIn, so you'll be able to get it there soon as well. I didn't find a Google Play edition for Galt, but yeah, WeAreLibertarians.com. You can listen to it 24/7 stream. I've caught a couple episodes. Like, I caught the debate recap that we did that was really interesting. I caught a conversation Joe Ruiz and I had about parenting and DCS stealing some children. Really fun way. Like, what I like about it is that you go back and you hear things that you wouldn't have picked that. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons I want to do it, because I've had like these streams on other shows that I like. And, like, you would never go and pick that episode, but because YouTube or the radio station pick that, you end up getting exposed to something that you wouldn't have ordinarily heard. So that's why it's kind of cool. It's a 24/7 stream of all the Wall shows, and it's at WeAreLibertarians.com. We Are Libertarians Radio. Look for it in iTunes and soon the TuneIn Radio. Editor's note. This is important if you've had any problems with your podcast. Let's say you're in a podcast catcher like Google Play or Stitcher or TuneIn, and something happens to your feed, then you need to go and re-add it, because I went through this weekend, and I intend to leave something called FeedBurner. I realize I'm cutting into Harry's time. This is what's going to be my final thought. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go.
All right. So FeedBurner. Sorry. I just got a lot to say tonight. FeedBurner is a Google product, and Google famously just kills stuff off. Yes. And so we use a company called Fireside to host all of our podcasts now. And because of your donations or your subscriptions, I'm able to pay for that cost. And we've had various locations for hosting podcasts in the past. Everything is now cleaned up. So I've deleted all the old podcasts. You can hear all the archives at SoundCloud. But if you have a problem with any of the feeds, then go to WeAreLibertarians.com and grab the new RSS feed. So if at some point over the next month something happens to We Are Libertarians and it stops updating, you need to go grab the new RSS feed. You'd probably be smart just to delete this and re-add it now at WeAreLibertarians.com. So the reason I'm doing that is that if Google kills off FeedBurner, we'd be hosed because they just will shut it off. And I want to get us on a more reliable platform. So that FeedBurner.com/WeAreLibertarians feed is now wal.fireside.fm/RSS. That's what it looks like.
Yay.
So all of the other podcasts have been transitioned to Fireside, have everything updated at the website. I've updated it in iTunes and all the back end stuff. Like, I spent hours working on the back end tech of this stuff. It's a little crazy, but I do it for you because I love you.
Yeah.
So just in case you have experienced some sort of issue with, let's say you listen to Boss Hog of Liberty and Google Play, or Miranda's World in Google Play, and all of a sudden it disappeared, then you need to go re-add it because we had to re-update everything. So it's a huge pain in the butt, and I'm paranoid we're going to lose subscribers. We probably will, but I'm telling you now, update your feed. So, all right, guys, thank you so much. Harry, any final thoughts?
Need more Miranda's World.
Yes, we've got quite an update coming. As soon as the lawyers clear the episode. All right. Thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. I would be remiss if I didn't thank Christy Avery, Craig Doolittle, Jason Doolittle, our $100 a month subscribers, and our $10 a month subscribers, Brantley Spicer, Joey Tarner, Pete Jones, Carly Ernst, Brandon Kester, Christian Emmons, Dan Dunbar, Doug Stream, Chad Oakage, Christopher Brokoff, and Todd Singer. I have sent out the posters. They will be arriving at some point this week. Can't wait for you guys to get them. These are collector's items. If you should join at $25 a month just to get the poster, because what I'm sending out will never be duplicated again. You will never be able to get it again. I'm even thinking of upgrading all the branding of We Are Libertarians from the gray, all the Stalinistic block art.
Yeah.
So these may be the last batch of posters that I ever collect. So you want to join at $25 a month on Patreon and get yourself a poster, and I will send it out to you. And thank you to Christy Avery for helping put those all together. All right, thank you. We love you so much. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your shares. And we will see you on Thursday. And until then, be good to each other.